Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Welcome, everybody, to Apple Pie Playground. I'm your host, Valerie. I certainly hope we've been out on the playground at least a little bit this week. And I want to thank you so much, BBS, for all that you do for us. We love you, BBS, for being out here on the playground with us. You know, folks, we set in motion a determination last week to begin a journey of wisdom this year. And at least here at Apple Pie Playground, there's nothing wiser than understanding who we are as children of a source creator. And it requires a little bit of dedication from us, doesn't it, to be in the family of God, as it were. It's really not the same to be a friend of God's or an admirer or an intellectual participant, so to speak, in the theories of God. It's not the same, is it, as being in the family of our Creator. And maybe that's why some of us feel so distanced from our source energies. Do we really trust that we are that which is creation itself? Or do we place maybe limitations on that trusting? Are we placing hurdles and conditions and judgments and blah, blah, blah on all of that which is creation? And are there limitations to where we can go with that understanding? But that's not what children really do, is it? Condition themselves or limit themselves. Children are quite the opposite out on the playground of life, aren't they? I mean, as children, we belong naturally in our environment. That is, you know, at least until we're told that we don't, right? And that's a lesson we learn early on, isn't it? For some reason, the dark loves a good hat trick, where every turn is about constraining us with exceptions to belonging. And we're quite alienated fairly quickly in life as a result, aren't we? In fact, we sort of perfect the art of self-sabotaging, don't we? Some of us are really, really good at it when we stop and think about it. Kind of comes right out of learning all those lessons of separation that we seem to learn in life and the rationalizations that come with all of that. Right? And all of that kind of metacognition, thinking about our worthiness and how we think about who we are and how worthy we are, and it's the limitations that we have in this physical body. All of this stuff, just we wear it like an emotional suit, don't we? But when we think about it in the beginning, children don't think in those terms, do they? Generally, they don't think in those terms because they aren't thinking when they create, right? When they commune in shared activities. So I guess a question might be, why are children so disregarding of what we as adults call reality? You know, how can they be so easily guided purely by their own interests and their focus and their preferences, and nothing else gets in the way, at least, you know, until we teach them those things that get in the way? And a question might be, what is reality to kids? I mean, when you think about it, what do they have that we don't have anymore? You know, when we come in the door at 6 p.m., we're exhausted from a day of doing every single thing we hate and nothing we love. And for children, reality is what happens when they mix sensory perception with an active imagination. That's reality for children. That's not really reality so much for adults who are kind of, you know, lumping it through their day of trying to make ends meet, is it? I mean, that's a sort of a different reality. But a child's reality, this sensory perception, this active imagination, it uses very little brain power, right? There are few mistakes and almost no judgment in that kind of environment, right? And there's almost no shame or guilt associated in a child's reality. A child is a true creator. A true creator. And that's going to be kind of important for us as we talk today and share some ideas. Her world as a child is a realm of moment after moment of choosing only what matters. By joining in, by jumping in and starting from where she is, right, without hesitation, feeling her way into her joy, her curiosity, right, in the moment, guides behavior. And can you even remember the last time you chose to operate with the lens of doing only what matters to you? Only what matters to you. When was the last time you did that? How long did we go today without thinking, for example? How long did we go? Did we get out of bed and bam, there we go, we're thinking already. Could we get through the day without judging things? Right? Do we long for just a few moments of getting away from other people, never mind communing with them, right? And do we hesitate saying yes or no? Do we feel our way through or do we think things through as adults? And we say, wait a minute, wait a minute. We are adults after all, right? It's this thing we do. We do adulting in an adult world, and doing things we don't like is sort of part of our duties. And making judgment calls is a way we, you know, navigate our decisions. And really, when you think about it, isn't it kind of ridiculous to ask us if we can manage not to think during a day that has 1,000 decisions that we have to make? I mean, right? How ridiculous would it be to have those expectations on an adult, right? Well, maybe, right? Maybe. We can choose a reality with that kind of focus, you know, if we want to. A focus on interpreting the world through mind energy, right? We can do that. We can do it all day long. And by judging things, and we can do that all day long, you know, by judging and making decisions and stressing out over everything and just running that mind for the sake of all the duties that we have. Right? We can spend our days doing that kind of stuff. We can spend all day doing things we hate. We can come through the door at 6 and 7 o'clock p.m. We can be as exhausted as we want to be, right? In the name of making a better life or keeping up with the Joneses, maybe, or just, you know, trying to stay afloat with the life that we've built, right? We have all of that right to do that. Those are all rights that we have the right to do every single one of those things. Yes, we do, friends. We have that right, the right not to play. We have that right. We have the right not to imagine, not to resist conceptualizing the experiences of our adult lives. We have the right not to be creators, friends. We have the right not to be creators, right? We have the right not to manifest. We have the right not to stay youthful. We have the right not to heal ourselves or not to train our extrasensory capacities. We even have the right not to ascend these bodies. We have all of those rights right here, right? All of the creative faculties that go into our beingness, right? They can be dimmed and atrophied and turned off, right? We can do that. And then what starts happening when we go down that road of adulting, right? And our limitations come into play and our belief systems walk us right out the door every morning. What happens? We start believing in the limitations of the mind and the body and the spirit. And then we forget who we are because, you know, we're adults now. We don't have time to remember. We've got too much to do, right? In this age of humanity, we're just so busy, busy, busy. So many responsibilities. We can't keep up, right? We can't keep up. And we remember our Creator a little bit, but we've forgotten ourselves almost entirely, right? And you know what? How do I know that, friends? How would I know to even say such a thing to a beautiful, beautiful audience whom I love so much? How do I know that? Because we think children have a lot to learn about life. That's how I know, friends. We think that children have a lot to learn about the reality of life. That's how I know what we've forgotten. It's how I know, friends. And so what do I mean? You know, we have the right not to be creators. What does that mean? Well, children's reality is integrative. It's integrative. What is real is what they want to be real at any given moment, according to the sensory experience of it all. And whatever that is, it's integrated into the experience. And children integrate and they keep on going, right? They keep on integrating. Everything is brought in and there is a learning and an integrating. And children's reality is moment by moment. There's nothing to plan for because the doing and the being, they're unified, right? In a flow of choices that keep children in the moment. And children's reality is self-harmonizing. Self-harmonizing. Kids go back to baseline very, very quickly when there are issues. Right? Kids recalibrate. They go back into a stasis. They go back into flow. Why? Because they're focused on their interests. They're focused on what they are interested in creating as a reality. They don't have time for these issues and problems. Things don't exist past the moment. They don't have to. They don't hold on to all of that extra baggage of mentality, right? And personality and judgment. Right? They don't carry those suitcases. They don't carry those suitcases. Children's reality is self-directed, right? Children know what they want, even if they can't really express it in adult terms yet. They are truly sovereign beings, truly sovereign, and they'll let you know what they want. And if they can't figure it out, they'll point, right? Or they'll cry, or they'll stomp their foot. Or they will find what they want, or they will create what they want, or they will pretend what they want. And they're very self-directed that way. Because children's reality is authentic, right? Self-interest is not a manipulation, but a focus, friends. Self-interest is a focus, and they have agency to be exactly what they perceive they are at any given moment. Right? What they perceive they are is exactly everything that they are and that they can be. And when they're finished with that moment, they can be anything else in just the next moment. Right? And that's kind of extraordinary when we stop and think about what we used to be and how we used to be as creators, and now maybe we're not so much the creators in our own lives anymore. Maybe we're something else, doing something else. And you know, this idea of being creators, it can be associated with the idea of creatio continua, okay, or ongoing creation. This flow of creation, the idea that we are born of a source creator in order to be co-creators, right? To continue the creation process of a curious God learning about itself, right? And we are co-creators in a continual process of creating. And it's who we are and what we do. And I guess a question might be, can we conceive of our part in the creation story, friends? That it continues with us as children of God, and that we grow in our co-creation capacity? And can we see how creation gets undermined and disabused when we sort of fail in our remembrance of what it is to be a creator? And how many of us are walking around the planet, you know, wholly unaware that we're co-writing the unfolding of our own creation story, right? With every step. Do we think about that? Has it crossed our mind at all today? And we think somehow that the biblical creation story was the one act performed by God, and now that we're, you know, all here and all the animals are here and the plants are here and the earth and the sky and, you know, everybody rested on the seventh day, that creation is somehow complete, that it is static, and that we are just filling time with our lives. Have you ever thought about it, really, really thought about how impossible that scenario really is for us? That we would be static at any moment in our lives, in a cosmos that continues to expand. And does it make sense that our choices to redirect our creation energies from their highest path can cause a lot of suffering and turmoil in human lives? You know, not just for ourselves, but for everything in the path of our creation energies. Right? Does it make sense that when we choose to do what we hate and to create what we hate, and perpetuate what we don't believe in, and work at what makes us tired and sick and old and dead, that we're co-writing a chapter of the creation story that darkens the brilliance of God's intentions? Those intentions to parent us toward our inner light that would guide us in the ways of co-creation? Does that cross our minds, what our goals and roles truly are? And do we see why our choices really do matter? And not just for our sakes, right? When we lose ourselves in building lives that are unsatisfying and ungratifying, and in growing relationships that are unhappy, and allowing what is destruction energy to alter our purpose and our joy and our passion, right? We're shifting the creation energy of an entire cosmos. Our choices ripple across the living waters that stir with every choice we make. Do we think about that? Or do we just try to get through our day? And maybe we think that it's a matter of spiritual intellect or a deep conversation, maybe between really, really cool people to sit and talk about being light beings in a dark world and the fascination of it all, right? And the theory of it all. And it sounds fantastical and metaphorical, and we feel pretty good, you know, that we can stay just far enough away from those ideas not to really have to apply them in our lives. Right? And the truth is, friends, for so many of us, is it possible that we are either creating or we are destroying? And that's something of a quote, a philosophical quote. And the problem is, our capacity for complexity is sort of at its limits in this age. Right? And just because we are children of a creator, it doesn't mean that that's translating very well. Right? It doesn't mean we're in harmony with our co-creation energies. It doesn't mean that we are functioning as co-creators, at least not in a healthy way, in a way that pulls in the light that our bodies need so very desperately to continue its co-creation process in this particular realm of experience, right? And as a matter of fact, most of us probably aren't in a space of conscious co-creation during most of our day. And so how much of our day is collaborating? And how much of it is actually just putting out fires and problem solving and managing difficulties, right? And how much of our day is mindful? And how much do we rush through and forget, or, you know, try to forget? And so, speaking of mindfulness, there was some research done at the university level on adult mindfulness, and there are a few takeaways. And they're very, very interesting. And the first takeaway is that the mind wanders a lot during an average adult's day. The mind wanders a lot. About half the day, every single day, the average adult mind is wandering aimlessly, trying to make connections, unfocused, right, and unconscious in what is going on in their environments, 47% of the time, every day. For most of us, right? I found that astounding, actually. It's a little scary. I mean, you know, we might tend to think of most of us as zombies walking around with that kind of, you know, wandering mind when you think about it. I mean, half of every day is pretty profound. And also, we have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts daily. And the estimation is that our thoughts can range from 12,000 thoughts to 70,000 thoughts each and every day. That is a lot of thinking, Right? Not necessarily deep thinking either. I mean, 70,000 thoughts, you can't really be putting a lot of effort in there, right? If you got that many thoughts kind of rushing through, right? But here's the thing. With all of that thinking, 95% is repetitive. So we will perseverate on our thinking. We will think and think and think and think and think, and it's all about the same thing. And then we will, let our mind wander somewhere, apparently. And then we just come back and just get back into that repetition, thinking, 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 right? Of this thing. And 70 to 80% of what we are thinking in an average day is negative. Negative thinking, 70 to 80%. It kind of makes you wonder what we're doing with the 20% of positive thinking that we're doing. And I think it might be in the car with the radio on our way home. That could be where our positive thinking is coming in. I'm not so sure. I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. But maybe. It might be worth kind of, running through your day and s just to see where that positive thinking might be peeking in there sometimes, right? But that tends to make our thinking processes fairly overwhelming when you think about it. And something else that I thought was fascinating. The average adult internet user, okay, get on the phones, get on the internet, the average user's attention span is only about 8 seconds. 8 seconds, 8.25 seconds, right? So imagine what we're doing, flipping, 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 flipping through information. We must be. 8 seconds is, you don't have much time to do much of anything with 8 seconds, right? That's a lot of unsustained opportunity for focus, right? I don't see focus anywhere in our day. And I know we have to have some because, we go to work and we have to concentrate on things like driving down the road or catching the right train into the city or, making dinner or whatever we do with our day, right? Feeding the dog, whatever we have to do. There has to be some kind of focus there, but it doesn't look like there's a whole lot. So, how much of our day is animated by ease and grace, then? And how much do we actually have to force into our day, right? How much do we anticipate with great excitement our day unfolding? And how much do we dread, right? And these are all emotions and sensory experiences from good, kind, loyal, loving hearts that we have, just trying to get through our day, doing the right thing most of the time. Right? And the truth is, it is a primary control mechanism. Okay? Getting humans to spend whole days suffering through unpleasant workloads and unrewarding functions, right? It is the hands down easiest way to get us to abandon our co-creator status. Our co-creator status, to forget our powers and our duties to those powers, right? And how? How would that be true? Well, it keeps us busy. So we don't push toward our potentials, right? We don't align with our purposes. We don't find our passions. We don't express our joy. Instead of all those other things of being aligned, we're sidelined, Right? Our creation energy wanes and our light dims. And you know what, friends? I can tell you this because it's cellular. We know what the body does at a cellular level. This is all recordable. We can test all of this. We can hook a body up to bunches and bunches of different kinds of machines, and science can see it all, friends. Right? And what do I mean? It's cellular. Well, when we are engaged in creativity, okay, our cells do a few amazing things. Okay? And the brain is synchronized in its activity. Okay, when we are engaged in creativity and we move into alpha and theta brain waves. Okay, it's all measurable. Alpha brain waves, they're called the bridge to creativity. Okay, the bridge to creativity. We are able to reach deeper creative states during alpha. Okay. And then there's theta brain waves, okay? Theta brain waves create what's called the realm of imagination. And these two things work together, okay? And they create what we call the aha moment. If you've ever had an aha moment, those are your brain waves in motion, in synchronicity together, giving you that beautiful opportunity. Right? That aha moment of creation, that co-creation aha moment, how beautiful they are. Would it surprise us to know that children stay in the theta brainwave most of the time? Most of the time. Alpha brainwave comes in, it kicks in, right? And this is where children are. Their brain waves are the expression of a realm of pure imagination, right? And not surprisingly, our deepest spiritual practices experience the theta brainwave activity, right? Where we experience vivid visualization, deep intuitiveness, feelings of oneness, of unity. Okay. This is what children are doing naturally. Naturally, these brainwave activities are wholly different in a stressful environment. Okay. Wholly, completely different in a stressful environment where beta waves take over. And it's what we call beta blocking of alpha waves that try to create the calmness in our lives. Well, there's beta blocking going on when we are engaged in this stressful mental environment, and we stay there most of the time. So, do we see not only how unlikely it is that we can experience the same creativity as children in such stressful adult environments, but also how completely rewired our body is in its flow, in its brainwave activity? Our brains cannot even think like children when we're stressed out and overburdened and lack focus. Right? We can't be like children. We can't even think like children. We can't open those energetic, electromagnetic doorways in the body. We can't get the same flow. It's what we mean to say when we've lost our capacity to be creators in our own bodies. Does that make sense, friends? It's a little scary. And I just want to address a little something just to kind of go just a little deeper. Christ loved the analogy of children. and of reminding adults that the kingdom of heaven belonged to children. And why is that so, friends? Why use that analogy to adults who stand around and think that all the children need to do is grow up? Why can't you just grow up? Why can't you just grow up and, quit being children? Why would Christ bring that analogy to a group full of adults who can't see the value in what he's trying to say? Why would he use that analogy? Well, it's because unless we are in our co-creative state like children are, we can't co-create, friends. We can't do it. We cannot synchronize this mind, this body, this spirit. Synchronicity, this flow of energy that has to run through our body and tether to our source and unify in this flow of shared conscious awareness. We can't do it without the mind of a child, right? We can't conceive of heaven. Our brains won't take us there. We can't create the heaven that they can in their pure, in their present moments, their purest essence. Right? There is a spaciousness outside of thinking that belongs to inspiration. It belongs to the portals that take us into trips within the imagination, and children find realities there. While adults sort of shrug off the powers of make-believe, those powers of the Merkaba at work. Do we understand, friends? Does that make sense for us? In their integrative processes, in their self-directedness and self-harmonizing tendencies, children are sovereign in their approach to co-creation energies. And yet their brains experience oneness and, with everything that's around them. They are unified. What is heaven if not this? What is heaven if not this, friends? And as adults, we sort of dream of that place on a beautiful shore, right? We dream of many mansions and streets of gold. And we give up our opportunity to create our heavens right here in the now. Because we've stopped co-creating, friends. Our brains have stopped doing it. Our heart space has stopped doing it. We're doing this thing called just living and surviving, all while the kingdom of heaven belongs to our children, who can imagine it and pursue it and remain present in it. It's a place where the body, mind, and spirit unify to create balance and intuition and invention. It is the God of creation. Our creator present in the present moment. Does that make sense, friends? It's instructive for us as we use wisdom like that to guide our paths this year, starting with the truth that we are co-creators with each other and our source, with our God producing an ever-evolving creation. If we choose it, if we choose to be, as a matter of physical practice, of choosing to function in a creative state of mind, as we choose presence and authenticity and sovereignty. And we have to create the circumstances under which our bodies enter into the state of co-creator flow, right? We can't just trip into it, right? See how intentional our lives, our living needs to be do we see now why fascination and curiosity and imagination are necessary for entering into the realm, right, of the child, of co-creation energies? Shall we be like children again more often, friends? So I want to be very, very careful with the way that I discuss the next idea that I would like to share. I'm going to be very, very careful not to offend, but I'm not so sure that I won't. So please forgive me on the front end in case our understanding diverges a little bit. So we hear Bible sermons about Christ's teachings about the nature of children and becoming like children as a matter of relying on God to provide us with all of our needs. And so we hear these sermons that describe Christ's reference to children as an act of depending on a heavenly God to make full provision for us as humans in our physical environment and in our afterlife. That is the sermon that we hear about the kinds of things Christ talks about when he refers to children. But that's not the intended message, friends. Okay, that's not what was intended with that. That's not the message, friends. We were never meant to sit idle and powerless under the hand of a micromanaging God, friends. That was not the intent of any reference to children and the relationship of God and his co-creating children. We were always meant to learn how to return the body to a state of creative flow, to find our heaven within the way children do, okay? The way children do. We were meant to find agency in our co-creative powers and use it wisely. And we can, since we're learning to start with truth and build our knowledge from experience and the values that we hold, right? So there is opportunity for us to grow in this co-creative spirit. And this year, I am hopeful that we use our wisdom to be as children again, to inherit the kingdom of God and our creative essence. And I hope for us that we take at least a few minutes in our day to awaken to our co-creator energies, right? Going within is not a moniker for spiritual piety, friends. Okay? It's a roadmap. And it leads us into the body and shows us how to activate the body for optimal energy exchange. And Christ knew all too well that the only opportunity for the human body to engage the co-creative spirit and that relationship with God as co-creators in alignment, right? In alignment, integratively co-creating, is to do it as children do it. To do it as the child, so that we would come to the Father as children in our minds, associated with our bodies that flow that beautiful energy within, and pull our spirits in. And that is what Christ means as children will inherit the kingdom of heaven, and let them come to me. Because that's what it will take, friends, for us to re-engage our mission as co-creators of an extraordinary process of expanding our cosmos. And it's where our mind needs to be. It's where our flow needs to be. It's where our physicality and our creativity needs to be. And Christ knew that. Christ knew that. And so that's what we'll do, right? That's what we'll do. We will physically organize our spirit, our energy, right? And our flow so that our reality can begin to change, right? Our reality can begin to change. And the interesting thing is we can look to our children to remind us. Right? Because the only people who know what that means to have very clear co-creator capacity are our children, friends. So through harmonizing energy flow and brain waves and parasympathetic states of being, we can remember. And we can know that learning is really remembering. It's what we talked about last week. And that's a bit of wisdom we can carry with us, right? Going within is not a metaphor, friends. When Christ said, go within, it was not a metaphor. It's literal. It is physical, right? Finding heaven within is literal. It's pulling light into cells as activation points, right? We are learning to fuse our spirits with bodies again in a way that energizes us and unifies us with a shared life force. This life force is energetic. It is co-creating. It is co-creating the essence of self. If we can be like children, if we can be like children, friends. And I, you know, I was looking around at a few things and I came across a particular songwriting channel. And the channel had something of an article that listed the ways that you could tell if someone is creative or not, right? How do you tell if somebody is creative? And so I thought I would kind of share the top five ways that you can tell if somebody's creative, right? At least according to songwriters. According to songwriters, there are some ways that you can tell if somebody has a creative bone, right? Number one, when inspiration strikes, they forget everything else but their creative work. So they are focused on their creative process, right? And daydreaming is a big part of their day. A creative person allows themselves to move outside of the physical realm and enter into the daydreaming that creates spaciousness for possibility. And they can change their opinion of their own work overnight. They can change their opinions can flow. They can continually be changing and growing and improving as a creative mind, right? And they're great at seeing situations from different angles. Seeing things from different perspectives. A creative person can do that. A creative person needs to do that. Right? And number five, they follow their heart. They follow their heart. Their heart space integrates the flow and synchronizes it through the body. And creative people follow that energetic, right? So, fun fact, number six on the list was a very happy kind of a number six on the list. The person seems more childlike than other adults around them. So the person can be more childlike. I thought that was super, super synchronistic, and I thought it was super fun to read that number six on this list of ways to tell if somebody's creative is that they are actually more childlike in their creative process. And that was a super fun thing to share. You know, who knew what things heaven was made of, right? How many of these behaviors describe us? You know, can we always start, you know, somewhere with something on that list when we think about what we would prefer in our lives, at least a little part of our lives or our day or our hour? You know, is there a place to start on this list as we move into our creative selves? And maybe number six is a great place to start. So, a question really might be, friends, why is it a true crisis of the spirit, you know, for us as humans, to leave the care and control of the human realm up to a God? Right? To leave all of this that exists as some kind of responsibility that we kind of heap on our Creator. Is there crisis in that kind of thinking? Well, is it because we rely on a God to get everything done in our lives? Right? We sit back, we pray, we expect results, and then we get disappointed or we rationalize less than desirable results. And I just keep asking that. Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Do we like it when we can label God and define God and place expectations on God and ascribe functions to God and attach emotion? And the more we're sort of able to package what God is, you know, for consumption, the more secure we feel, maybe, because, you know, we're relying on God's creation powers to do the job for us, right? Whatever that job is in this human realm, we're just going to let, you know, trust that God will take care of all of it. And do we realize that most of the ancient texts refer to God as unknowable, undefined, and nobody tried to define God, and you know, pretty much till the Bible? And it's no coincidence that Christ loves stopping people in their tracks with the old teaching, I am that I am, right? Nothing attaches with that kind of imagery, does it? And that kind of maxim sort of has to be experienced to be understood, doesn't it? The I am that I am. It takes a little bit to internalize that. There's no easy fix to that. There's no, you know, excuses to that kind of thing. There's no limitation. There's very difficult, a lot of difficulty even defining that as a beautiful reference point to who and what we are. But let me ask you, how can a child be a princess one minute and a giraffe that eats mud pies the next minute? And we would believe that they have any idea at all about heaven or co-creation energy or enlightenment, right? How would that be possible? And I would tell you, friends, it's possible because they are that they are. At any moment in time, their clarity and the eternal creative spark that connects them with the adventures of a soul in a human body makes it very easy to be the I am, to be the giraffe eating mud pies, to be the princess, right? Choosing to know itself, its mind, body, and spirit, and whatever daydream it happens to be in. And not through the struggles of a long work day or suffering that comes from keeping up with the Joneses, right? But in the sheer simple delight of fully embracing the pretending of a daydream. And so, speaking of pretending, maybe let's end our time together with a Dixit card. You want to? A Dixit card is a card from a deck of cards that describes a scene on the card meant to evoke the subconscious mind. And we use these cards to kind of peek into the subconscious mind and see what's up, right? And so as I describe the scene, we kind of build it in our minds. And then I'll ask some questions about the scene for us to kind of reflect on. And some of us like to use our notebooks for our reflections. So if you're ready, something to write with, something to write on, if you'd like to do that, we can share a Dixit card this week. So if we're ready, let's just sit back and relax. We don't have to close our eyes, but we can. And we're going to ready ourselves to imagine a scene as it unfolds. As I describe the scene, we will build the scene together and we will allow to arise whatever associations or thoughts or imagery might come up. We're going to allow it to come in. We're going to observe it very, very specifically, very focused. We're going to look at the detail, pay attention to what we see, what we feel, what we hear, right? And so here is our scene. Okay. In this scene, the wind is blowing and clouds are overhead and they are dark. Even though it's the middle of the day, and there's a person outside walking in the bad weather. And the person is walking along a path where the trees are swaying with the wind. And there's something about the person's body that's very, very different. The person is made of small pieces of paper all over the body. Okay, as the person walks, pieces of paper fly off and fly into the wind. And the person keeps walking as more of the paper comes off. Soon, the person starts to run. Do we have the scene fixed in our minds, friends? Are we ready for some questions? Question number one: where is this scene taking place? Be as specific as you want to, it's up to you. Where is this scene taking place? Do you recognize the area? And don't make anything up, but record your impressions, what arises. Okay, next question. Who is it walking in the scene? Who is it walking down this path? Question number three. Why is that particular person in your scene? If it's you, why are you there? Okay, question number four. Where is the person going? Be as specific as you can. Where exactly is the person going? Number five. What kind of paper is this person made out of? Be as specific as you can. Look closely in your mind's eye. What kind of paper is this person made out of? And number six, why is this person made out of paper? Why? And the very last question, how hard was it to imagine the person in this scene? So the interesting thing about this kind of exercise is the tendency for thoughts to arise, right? And over the next few days, your brain might keep thinking about the imagery, and so be open to whatever might come up, right? And as always, friends, I am so glad you played along for a little more insight into some of our subconscious suitcases, as we like to call them. You are your own best translator of the ideas that pop up for you. And so keep that in mind as things may come back up again with respect to this scene. Right? And so if you pulled out your notebook today, thank you so much for taking advantage of the tools that we like to share each week. A notebook might be kind of fun. So those of you brave enough to try the exercise, I'm so very grateful. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it bears fruit for each and every one of you. And thank you so much for spending time with me today. It is one of my favorite things to do in my week. But now, friends, it is time for me to head home. I can't wait to be back on the playground with you next week. And thank you so much, BBS, for all your good work. We love you so much. And friends, until next time.
Time to head home, friends. Thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.